Let There Be Light. From Flashbangs and Frag Grenades. By Calchexis. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on League of Legends by Riot Games.
Chapter 39. Come a little closer. Let me tell you a secret that only I know. I love you. Is that silly? I tell you my secret every day, but it's still a secret that only I know. That's the nature of it for most people. The difference for me is that I know you love me because I can hear it. I can hear every song and every note, every chorus and harmony is right there for me to listen to. And all I need to do is open my ears. When I was very young, I didn't know that other people couldn't hear souls, so I didn't understand why anyone would be cruel. How, if they could hear the pain they were inflicting echoing back at them from blocks away, could they be so ruthless? How could they bear the noise? Then I learned the truth, that I was different. I learned that I could hear souls, and you'd think that would have made me feel special, but it didn't. It broke my heart. Do you have any idea how hopeless it feels to know that the whole world is bumbling around deaf and blind, hurting each other and never knowing why or how to make it stop? All of a sudden, the world was just so big and so awful. It was filled with blind leviathans destroying everything in their path because they couldn't know better. I say couldn't on purpose, too, because didn't sounds like they can change it, but they can't. No matter how they strain their ears, they will never hear the world the way I do. No matter how hard they listen, they'll never be able to hear the pain they inflict or the love that someone else has for them. It's crushing. I try every day to show people that their songs don't have to clash. I try to show them that their souls are the same. But it never works because everyone else is deaf except me. That's why love is a secret that only I know. Everyone else just has to believe in love. They have to have faith that it's there and will remain there forever. They have to believe in it because they can't see it or hear it or touch it. I'm telling you this secret so you'll know too. That no matter what happens, I'll always be able to hear the love in your heart. No matter how much you're hurting or how sad you are, I'll always hear it. And I will always love it. That's what I mean when I say I love you. It's me telling you a secret that only I know.
Seraphine set down her stylus and read over the letter she'd just finished writing. The ink was still glistening on the page. As she thought about crumpling it up and trying again. Her chair was surrounded by failed attempts to put her feelings into words. And this latest attempt was, in her opinion, the most successful, so it might just have to do. Massaging her temples, Seraphine tried to hedge out the whispers that encroached at the edges of her mind. Ever since binding herself to Janna, her ears had gotten more sensitive. More so than she was willing to admit to Renata, in fact. She had a feeling it had more to do with Janna's passive presence than anything, too. Acting as a host to a being as powerful as Janna Hrem was bound to have some side effects, and one of them, apparently, was vastly expanding Seraphine's already expansive senses. It was the breathing that was the real burden. She could hear Zaun breathing, not the people, but Zaun. The whole city was like an asthmatic in the middle of an attack, groaning and wheezing without end. If this was what Janna heard every day, then Seraphine could sympathize as to why she would be so driven to help. Altruism aside, Seraphine was willing to do a lot just to get some peace and quiet. Except there was no easy way to do it. Doing her best to push the sounds to the edges of her mind, Seraphine sprinkled fine sand across her letter, blew softly across it, then set it aside. It wasn't good enough. But it was the best she was capable of, so it would have to do. Seraphine had learned years ago that trying to describe the world as she saw it to other people was a little like trying to explain to a shark that her knees hurt. It had tempered her expectations accordingly. Not that it actually made her feel any better, but it was a way to force herself to stop beating her head against that particular brick wall. standing from her desk. Seraphine made her way through the voluminous suite that she shared with Renata, her ears already picking up the approaching soul. She reached the door just before the person on the other side made to knock, and opened it to find Lux standing across from her with a faintly bewildered look on her face that morphed, a moment later, into amusement. "You knew," she said warmly. "I have good ears," Seraphine replied with a small smile. Lux was dressed in traditional Zaunite layers of cotton and leather, and she was looking more and more at home in them with every passing day. Seraphine was sure that one day the only sign left that Lux wasn't a native-born Zaunite would be her Damasian blonde hair. "So," Lux said as she followed Seraphine through the small foyer and into the living room, which had been repurposed into a fitting room. "Are you excited?" Lux moved in behind her and began carefully threading her fingers through Seraphine's hair. It was a full day till the wedding, and with the sheer amount of hair that Seraphine had, Lux had wanted to go over a few different styles for her to wear during the ceremony, even if it was likely to be quite brief. Braids were, of course, the most popular option in Zaun, so that was the current plan. Seraphine gave a weak laugh as she said, "I'm something, all right. Second thoughts? Never." Seraphine pulled a stool out and sat down on it. "I just never really imagined getting married, to be honest."
"Never?"
Lux echoed as she began carefully separating out locks of hair and letting them fall straight. Seraphine shrugged. "Maybe when I was a little girl, I guess," she said. "Back before I really had a handle on my magic, I mean. It's hard to imagine being so close to someone, though, when you can hear everything going on in their heart." Lux made a quiet noise in the back of her throat as she continued to work.
"I never really thought about it like that. I always imagined having that kind of information would make it easier, not harder."
"Says the spy," Seraphine replied playfully. "Touché." Lux held out a hand over Seraphine's shoulder.
"Brush?"
Seraphine passed a hairbrush over to Lux and forced herself to relax as her maid of honor got to work carefully brushing the waves of pink hair in front of her into a semblance of order.
"It is, though,"
Seraphine said as she settled in and allowed Lux to work.
"Is what? Harder?"
Seraphine pressed her lips to a hard line. "Most relationships are built on a foundation of little white lies, after all. There's no malice in them, quite the opposite, actually. They're there to keep the peace and make the person you love smile," she said wanly. "That's not a bad thing, and the ugliest, nastiest truth of all is that honesty isn't always the best policy." Lux made a quiet hum in the back of her throat as she brushed Seraphine's hair. She didn't need to speak, and Seraphine was well aware that Lux agreed with her. She came from a place where magic was persecuted, sometimes unto death, so that was almost painfully true in her personal case. When she did speak, it was in a soft voice as Lux said, "True, but it's a lot more cynical than I expected to hear from you, if I'm being honest." "Being honest is something I'm not very good at, actually," Seraphine admitted. Seraphine could hear Lux frown as she said, "Really?" A bitter laugh escaped Seraphine's lips. "Do you have any idea how often I had to lie while I was growing up?" she asked. "Did you know that I know what infidelity sounds like? I know what every lie sounds like, not just the white ones, but the red ones and the green ones and all the other ones, too. I know what hate sounds like and what hurt sounds like. I know what it all sounds like, but you can't just say it. Not unless you want to ruin lives." That was, on reflection, probably why it had taken her so long to realize how angry she was all the time. Renata had seen it because she had experience and knew a kindred spirit when she saw one. Seraphine had simply buried it for so long that she had forgotten the anger was even there. "I might be the wrong person to opine on that since I used to ruin lives as a profession," Lux replied casually. "Especially since now I just do it for fun and profit, but I suppose I can see your point." She stepped back from brushing Seraphine's hair,
and shook out the long locks until they were falling soft and straight. That must have been very confusing for a child. It had been. In fact, that had been one of the driving reasons why her parents had created the dampening device that she had used for much of her early years. It had been for her safety and her comfort, too, of course, but it had also been for the sake of peace. Seraphine still remembered the time she had gone to her mother and asked why their neighbor had lied to his wife about where he had gone the night before, or why his song changed around the young man who came by every other day for deliveries. She remembered how her mother had taken her aside and told her that she shouldn't be listening to those things, that they were private. Seraphine had cried because she thought she'd done something wrong because she couldn't help it. She had cried because she had thought that that made her bad. "It would be easier if I didn't know," Seraphine said finally. "It would be easier not to hear any of it." "Would you trade it away then, if you had the choice?" Lux asked. Seraphine chuckled and shook her head. "Not for anything," she replied. "Maybe when I was little I might have said yes, but the fact that I can hear all of those things is just a small part of being able to hear everything joining together, and if I can hear, then maybe one day I'll be able to make it happen. And I'll never be able to do that if I traded that sound away." "You're a better woman than I," Lux said wryly. "You're probably a wiser one, though," Seraphine countered. "Maybe," Lux said. "All I care about is Jinx and being with her. Everything else could burn for all I care." Her hands began moving in the patterns of a traditional Zonite braid. "But the world needs people like you far more than it needs people like me. In fact, there are probably too many people like me, selfish people who only care about their own happiness and the happiness of a very select few." "So you think it's wrong to be selfish?" Seraphine asked. "Not at all," Lux replied as she finished one braid and moved to another. "Selfishness keeps us alive, too. If all the world is burning, you have to put yourself out first before you can save anyone else. It's fine in moderation, like most things." "Selfishness in moderation, what a very Demacian concept." "Piltovans and Zonites didn't really do anything in moderation." "But I don't moderate," Lux continued, "because I don't care. If the world burns and it's just me and Jinx at the end, and the ashes, I'll still be happy." She moved to another set of braids. She really was quite fast at that. "But you're not like that, Sarah. Saving one person isn't good enough. You have to save them all, or at least as many as you can." "That's how I felt for most of my life," Seraphine said softly. "I had all these grand ideals. I wanted to unite the cities, but lately I feel like I'm getting more selfish." "Why do you say that?" Lux asked. "Because if I were to have to choose between my goals and..." Seraphine turned to look up at Lux wearily. "If I had to choose between the world and Renata, I'm not sure which one I would pick, and that scares me." "Well, my advice won't be very helpful since you know what I'd say." There was a hint of grim laughter in Lux's voice that Seraphine almost found funny in and of itself. "But enough of that," she continued, stepping back. "What do you think of this?" Seraphine turned her head to examine Lux's work in the mirror. It was actually really beautiful. Lux had woven her hair into four long, voluminous braids. The actual coils of the braids were quite thick, giving them the appearance of weight, but were perfectly light in reality. Lux had also left her bangs and the hair that fell over her ears free to frame her face naturally. And overall, it had a very pleasing effect. "I love it," Seraphine said as she turned back to Lux. "How long did it take you to think of this?"
"Not as long as you'd think,"
Lux said with a smile as she pulled up a chair beside Seraphine, sat down, and held out a hand.
"And Jinx helped me practice."
"I'll have to thank her then," Seraphine said. Lux laughed. "You can try, but you don't have to." "When I say she helped, I mean I spent about 6 hours braiding her hair in various different styles, while she hyperfixated on building grenades."
"Adorable,"
Seraphine remarked dryly.
"Isn't she, though?"
Lux replied cheerfully. That cracked what little tension had tightened between them, and both women burst into laughter. The truth was that, for all of her faults, and she had plenty, Lux was probably one of Seraphine's favorite people. Now that she was free of Demacia, Lux proved to be one of the most honest people that Seraphine had ever met. She never had to worry about Lux taking offense or about saying something about Lux's inner thoughts, because Lux was perfectly happy to say them all out loud on her own. Maybe it was because, after so long spent living submerged beneath enough secrets to drown a nation, Lux simply couldn't be arsed to care anymore. There was nothing that Seraphine could truly say about Lux that Lux wasn't willing to say about herself or admit to anyone who asked. She knew precisely who she was and what she wanted, and she was happy to stay that way regardless of anyone else's opinion on the matter. "Can I ask you something a bit personal?" Lux asked as she caught her breath around some small aftershocks of mirth. "Sure," Seraphine said. "Why not?" "What does Jinx's soul sound like to you?" Lux asked. "Like chaos with a beat," Seraphine replied easily. "It's like a pyrotechnics display going off right next to a big brass band, complete with the screams when one of them catches fire, and then the stage collapses." Lux snorted as another swell of laughter bubbled out of her. She wiped at her eyes as she leaned back, then asked, "And what about mine?" Seraphine hesitated. Lux wasn't the first person to ask that question, and it rarely went well. "Are you sure you want to know?" she asked. "I'll tell you if you really want, but most people don't." "I'm just curious," Lux said. "It won't change anything." Which was true, although it was less a concern that it would change something and more that most people didn't live in such a way as to be wholly comfortable knowing what their soul actually said about them. Most people lived lives wrapped in layer upon layer of small lies they've told to themselves about themselves. Lux wasn't really like that, though, so it would probably be fine. "It's like someone holding a single, powerful golden note," Seraphine said softly. "And they just hold it and hold it and hold it, until you imagine they're about to fall over and die from suffocation, but they don't. And they hold it, and they hold it, until it doesn't even sound like a note anymore." She turned and looked Lux in the eye. "It's how I knew you were insane. No one else could possibly hold that kind of focus for that long." To Seraphine's surprise, Lux laid a hand over her own heart and let out a breath of relief. "Oh, thank the gods." "Really?" Seraphine asked in disbelief. "Of course," Lux said happily. "I already know that Jinx is insane, so wouldn't it be awful if I weren't?" "I don't know if I have a good answer for that," Seraphine admitted. "It's okay," Lux said. "All that matters is that she and I are together and that we share everything, even our madness." She reached out and took Seraphine's hand. "Although honestly, if you weren't very much taken, I don't think either of us would mind sharing more." Well, that was certainly a thought, and one that reddened Seraphine's cheeks. "Flattering, but I'm fairly sure Renata would have words about that," she said dryly. Lux nodded. "True," she said, and stood. "But thank you for telling me and for honoring me by letting me stand at your side tomorrow." Standing with her, Seraphine took her by the hand and squeezed it. "There's no one I'd rather be next to. I do love you, Lux, I hope you know that." "And what love I have left, I'd give you," Lux admitted gently, and surprisingly, Seraphine could hear that she was speaking true. Above Zaun, but below Piltover, soldiers moved in droves on screens that flickered between sections all over the city, as the command center buzzed with activity. The great tunnels that spiderwebbed through the lower reach of the city and which had once been used exclusively by the clan had recently been opened for use by the Brass Cadre and their Demacian auxiliaries. Camille had originally considered keeping that method of movement secret and confined to the clan to be of paramount importance, but the reinforcements from Noxus, combined with the Zaunite's ability to appear anywhere around Piltover practically at will by following the tunnels, necessitated sacrifice. It was a galling variable that couldn't have been foreseen. For decades, the city of Zaun was almost as much of a mystery to its inhabitants as anyone else. Native Zaunites could easily navigate their local pipeworks and tunnels, but anything else was as labyrinthine to them as it was to anyone. And then suddenly, seemingly overnight, that had changed. How the forces of Zaun had held that ace for so long without Clan Pharos' intelligence operatives twigging to it was baffling. Once again, it all came down to Jinx. It had to have been Jinx, or perhaps Silco. That wily old fox may very well be sneering at her from beyond the grave. This certainly felt like something Silco could have pulled off. It was commonly held knowledge that no maps of Zaun existed. But all recent events pointed to that no longer being true. It explained how they had struck the Eastern Sun Gate with such unity, and how they had maneuvered so many troops into place without anyone noticing. It certainly explained how they continually repulsed every Piltoven attack, while at the same time launching counteroffensives of their own to keep reinforcements and garrisons off balance and bloodied. The passages of the clan would go some way towards mitigating that, but it was a bandage, not a cure. The cure was still in progress. Zaun was still relying on its crude chemtech, numbers, and terrain advantage. But that wouldn't last forever. Piltover was the city of progress. Given enough time, Piltoven victory was simply inevitable. While it was true that quantity was a quality all its own, real, focused quality was something that could never be matched by mere numbers. Piltover had that quality, while Zaun did not. Ergo, Zaun would lose. The longer Zaun stalled, the more certain Camille became that she would rise victorious. There would be death, yes, there would be blood. But the gears of the great city had always run on such things. This was nothing new. Piltovens would die, but many, many more Zaunites would die as well. And that was a sacrifice that she was willing to make because the end result would secure a new, golden future. Shifting in her command chair, Camille flipped through the report she had been given less than an hour ago. Thus far, the attrition rates were many times worse than what the Council had predicted at the outset of a possible war, and they thought they'd been pessimistic. To Camille, however, they were perfectly average. Perhaps a little higher than she would have liked, but well within the margin of error. The cadre was just a number after all, and so long as that number was being expended at a replenishable rate, such that the total value would not fall below a critical threshold before a certain date, then it was fine. Zaun was free to keep optimistically counting its skirmishes and battle victories as wins. Camille couldn't care less about winning battles. She only cared about winning the war, and as far as she was concerned, so long as things continued as they were going, the war was already won.
Lady Pharos.
Camille turned to regard the adjutant who approached her. He was holding out another report, but this one had a very particular signature that she had been waiting to see for a few days.
Finally,
Camille said flatly as she took the report and looked over it, then smiled as she folded it up, stood, and said,
Continue the holding pattern. Remain on full defensive measures.
To the command center.
No forays into Zaun to be approved until I say otherwise.
She didn't bother asking if they understood her. The clan were more like extensions of herself than anything else. They would do as she bid them, as they always had. Camille had led Clan Pharos fearlessly and capably for almost a century. There were always ups and downs, victories and losses, but none of that was ever anything but the twitching of a gear in a machine that ultimately had but a single outcome available to it. Total victory. Striding out of the command hub, Camille made her way through the tunnels and down toward the manufacturing laboratory. The research lab was still under lockdown since not long ago someone had breached the halls and killed her favorite punching bag. It had been galling, but not damaging. Urgot had served his purpose. His continued existence had only been to prove a point. Still, Camille had been looking forward to killing that bloated carcass herself. While there were no overt signs of who had executed the infiltration, Camille had her suspicions. There wasn't enough collateral to be a move from Zaun, which meant the Council. Camille had hoped they would be wise enough to sit back and allow her to do their jobs for them, but old blood and power do not easily part ways. At least she knew it wasn't the former sheriff, now brigadier. The plague was doing a number on her, but oddly not as much of a number as Camille had expected. In fact, she was on the mend, which was very strange. It couldn't be a coincidence.
Adjutant, Camille said as they approached the laboratory. Dispatch an agent and get me Brigadier Kiriman's test and blood work results. I want to know why she's not dying.
Yes, ma'am.
Now.
Yes, ma'am.
The adjutant made a sharp U-turn and began walking in the opposite direction as Camille came to the research lab. Pushing the door open, Camille stepped inside the dimly lit room. The only lights were the soft blues of Hextech glowing from all the technology decorating the walls and from the 7 surgical slabs that encircled the center of the room. An older man stood in the center of the slabs, and of the 7, 6 of them bore half-finished humanoid chassis. The bodies were in various states of completion, and while they all had the same dimensions, each one possessed marked differences in structure and loadout. The final slab was the one that drew Camille's eye.
Exemplary work, Dr. Revick,
she said as she laid a hand on Corin's shoulder.
You've really outdone yourself this time.
That's a word for it, he said dully. Camille rolled her eyes.
Please, Doctor, this is progress, she said. You have created the method by which Piltover will meet its ultimate victory.
I have created an abomination, Corin replied through his teeth.
Then by that logic, you also abominated your own daughter out of grief, Camille said flatly. At least now you've done it for a real purpose.
Corin shook his head and scoffed. You're a monster, Camille Ferros, he said darkly.
A common, if regressive, incomplete and overly pious conclusion, Camille replied. Is she ready to wake?
Have at it, she's merely sleeping, Corin replied. May I go?
Please do.
Camille had already put the doctor's presence out of her mind, if not his fate. The truth was that Corin Revick was becoming a liability. He was brilliant and, for the moment, crucial. And so long as Ferros held his daughter, he would obey. Within a certain level of reason. Camille was no fool, though. She was fully aware that rebellion did not manifest in great sweeps, but in subtle actions. Soon Corin would cross a moral event horizon, and then he would begin pushing back. Sabotage would come soon after. But that was in the future. For now, Corin was still useful, and Camille intended to wring every ounce of brilliance from the man before she had his corpse deposited off a cliffside. She even allowed herself a brief feeling of gratitude toward him as she reached out and stroked the cold but pliable cheek of the young woman resting prone on the canted medical slab. Soft, lovely gray eyes opened over freckled cheeks and framed by a gentle bob of red hair. And Rengleamspire blinked dozily before smiling up at Camille.
How did I fall asleep? For a little while.
Camille murmured.
How are you feeling, my dove?
Revengeful,
Ren said as a smile grew across her face. And there was almost nothing organic left of her anymore. If Orianna had been the genius prototype, then Rengleamspire was the perfected and finished model. Everything that the champion Orianna could do, Ren could do faster and with deadlier intent. Camille's smile grew wider.
That's my girl.
The text of this story is available on AO3. Music by Dot Matrix. If you would like me to record a story, voice over a character, get in touch using the contact information available on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as a link to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.